First panelist, if you haven't heard her speak before, Rita Vandevort Warren is a public health analyst and government project office in the Division of Services Improvement at the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment at SAMHSA. She handles the financing and cost of treatment. She's the CSAT lead on Medicaid and health reform issues, directs the cost studies, and provides technical assistance and financing to states, grantees, and providers. And I can tell you this, as a CSAT staff person, Rita is our go-to person. If she's off sick, we have nowhere to, we have fewer people to go to.
I never get sick.
Rita never gets sick. Previously, she worked at the National Association of Social Workers on managed care, medical health, and substance abuse, Medicaid, and telehealth. And she began her career in Hawaii, lucky Rita. So I would now like to turn the microphone over to her.
Thank you very much, Linda. Well, thank you all for hanging to the last session so that we have an audience and aren't just talking to ourselves. I appreciate it. I want to talk today, I have nothing to disclose. I have no money, I have two children in college, so I am poor. I want to talk today about the Affordable Care Act that was passed. I think there are some very important things that will be very useful for the substance abuse treatment field. And I typically say that the three legs of that stool are that this bill extends affordable coverage. It really has a major emphasis on better care and better integrated care. And it has a strong emphasis on healthy people and communities through their prevention efforts. You know, it's 2014 when the major coverage expansions will happen. The one that I, of course, love the most is the one that extends Medicaid coverage to up to 133% of the federal poverty level, which I put there is $29,500 for a family of four. What is very helpful for us is some of you that have gray hairs like me may remember that a lot of adults with addictions lost their supplemental security income in the 90s because Congress, in its wisdom, took addictions off as a qualifying diagnosis. But those people not only lost SSI and income support, but they also lost their access to Medicaid. As a childless adult, it's very hard, unless you're disabled, to get on Medicaid or a TANF child and parent. So this will be an important expansion, and further, the benchmark plan that these people will get requires that essential mental health and substance abuse services are covered. So we will be part of the benefit. Just to countermand some of the bad information out there, the feds will pay for 100% of that expansion in the first 3 years. And then over the next few years, it drops to about 90%. So this is not to be a huge burden on the states. There's a number of other improvements. Medicaid applications should be simplified. They're going to be up on the web. I don't know how many of our low-income people, I guess they can go to the library and apply. But the whole notion is to have a better integrated system. So if I think I'm eligible for Medicaid and I go and apply and they say, no, you're not Medicaid eligible, but you're eligible for the exchange, then they make me eligible at that time. I don't have to go someplace else and apply again. So Medicaid, the attempt is really to simplify Medicaid enrollment. Then the exchanges, I think, are probably the most confusing part about this law, but they are really to help those between 133% up to 400% of the federal poverty level. Well, for a family of four, that goes up to $88,000. I looked up on Census Bureau, and that's about, that's the majority of people in this country. Now, what is an exchange and what kind of assistance? An exchange is simply a entity that is supposed to make it easy for you to go and apply and get assistance if you are essentially the working poor, or if you're not employed and have to buy an individual policy, which you may know is hugely expensive these days, or you're a small employer. And this exchange is supposed to be, again, up on the web and makes it easier to compare plans. And they have different kinds of assistance. So if you can't afford your premiums because it's more than 10% of your income, then you can get a voucher from the exchange. Or if you can't afford your co-pays because you're going to the doctor every week, you can get some assistance there. Of course, it's kind of on a sliding scale, but you can see, though, that this is a huge coverage expansion, up to 400% of the poverty. And it's these state exchanges that are really much of the heart of that. So let me also touch upon the employer coverage changes that happen. Number one, there's been a lot of bad information out there. There is no requirement that employers offer health insurance. And there is a requirement that that individuals get coverage by 2014. But there are exemptions, hardship exemptions, Native Americans are exempt. There are other mechanisms, and initially the fine is, I forget, it's under $400. But the employer coverage is changing under this bill, and some of these changes were actually implemented this September. So all new plans that get issued after September 23rd, 6 months after the bill was passed, are not able to have limits on lifetime limits. You can enroll your adult child up to the age of 26. And there are other prevention services have to be covered. What prevention services? Well, it's defined as prevention services on the A or B list of the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. The good news is that ESPRT is on the B list, so that most of the new plans will start in January. But those new plans have to cover ESPRT screening with no cost share. So that's an important expansion. Then in 2014, there's even more protections required of employer plans. You can't drop people for pre-existing conditions or for using a lot of medical services. There's annual limits are eliminated, which for our field, we've had a lot of annual limits and lifetime limits, so this will be helpful. That's 2014, that's the big enchilada when a lot of the changes are happening. But that said, there's a lot of changes happening now. So in 2010, there was a Prevention and Public Health Trust Fund that was funded, and in fact, SAMHSA got some of those funds for smoking cessation and some of screening. There was also early child visitation state grants that are started. And oh, by the way, when the state applies, they have to say if the high-risk communities have substance abuse, and they have to say, what is your substance abuse capacity to meet those needs? So it's like we're getting on the map here. Last month, October, all Medicaid programs have to cover smoking cessation for pregnant women. And also last month, they made the home and community-based services options more flexible. And there are changes rolling out next year. One of the ones I'll talk about in a little more detail is an option under Medicaid to provide a health home. But also in January, we're going to see a national strategy for quality improvement and a national prevention and wellness strategy. So the health homes I want to touch upon, and I've been involved in some of this. Medicaid, you may know, Medicaid has basic services and then a lot of state option services. This is going to be a new state option to provide home health home services. What are the services? Comprehensive care management, care coordination and health promotion, patient and family support. So it's not the treatment services, but all the coordination of care services for those with chronic illnesses. And it defines six diseases, and mental health and substance abuse are part of those disease listings. Just as a quick aside, they also have a BMI of over 25. I thought, are you kidding me? You know, they didn't know what they were writing, because that's the majority of Americans right now have over a BMI over 25. But, you know, once it's written into the law, you know, there it is. So it'll be starting in January, and a lot of states are interested because they get a 90% federal match, and so for 2 years. So a lot of states are chomping at the bit. We're going to come out with guidance shortly about how to do those programs. So what is the impact in our field? Well, they estimate that of the 35 million uninsured, and I just saw CDC rules that there's now 40 million uninsured. We'll have to change our numbers. But the estimate was that 16 million of those will become eligible for coverage through Medicaid, that Medicaid expansion. And of those 16 million, 4 to 6 million are likely to have mental health and substance abuse problems. So it's a huge portion of those folks. I'm going to skip a few. So I think this is causing us to really rethink how we're going to provide coverage, especially for this expansion population. I think, you know, when I talk to CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, you know, they've been working with persons with mental illnesses for many years. But typically, the substance abuse benefits in most states, not all states, have been limited. And so a lot, they don't have the same experience, they have a lot of concerns. Well, if you looked at Massachusetts, which of course did this expansion already, they showed that not only is it difficult to get these people enrolled, but they tend to drop off enrollment. So, you know, they'll get Medicaid enrollment, but in 2 or 3 months, they didn't provide that one piece of paper that documented this, and so they fall back off. So that's called the churning of Medicaid. It's also interesting, I presented with the Massachusetts State Substance Abuse Director, who was saying that even though in the state as a whole, 95% now of the population now has coverage, when they ask their substance abuse facilities, it's more like 86% have coverage. So there are clearly gonna, we're gonna have to think real hard. I think our providers are gonna have to think about how do we help these people. Somebody from Massachusetts, and I recently saw it as a recommendation, said what we ought to do is when they send out that Medicaid letter saying you got to go get recertified, they send it to the provider as well as the client, because then the provider can help them try to maintain Medicaid coverage. The other piece of it is, are our facilities ready for this expansion? I looked at 2008 data on substance abuse facility, our INSAT survey, and only 58% of the substance abuse facilities said they accepted Medicaid. You know, if you're familiar with what it takes to have Medicaid clients, you have to, you know, check eligibility, you have to check, you know, you have to do claims-based kind of billing, you have to have clean claims. It requires an infrastructure that especially I'm concerned about our small facilities. Again, looking at INSATs, about a third of the facilities are less than 17 beds. So those are pretty small facilities. So we're thinking at SAMHSA about how to help them. We're working with some of the provider groups, but I would urge you to do some thinking about that. So let me mention a few other pieces of the ACA that I think are worth thinking about. One is it has a huge emphasis on primary care, even to the extent that primary care should coordinate the specialty care. And I don't think we've always been the best partners with primary care. Sometimes it's confidentiality concerns, I don't want to share it. But on the other hand, as we move toward electronic health records, we need to, and primary care is really going to be the place where they want to give the dollars so that, and they want to get away from like widgets of care. You know, I don't want to have to pay for every single visit, la, 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 because then you'll just do the patients faster and I just pay more widgets, you know. We need to think more globally. You know, I'll give you a payment to manage diabetes for a year. But then if you need specialty care, the primary care doc has got to help buy that care. So again, we've got to think about how we can better integrate. I always bring up federally qualified health centers who deal with much the same population we do, uninsured adults, and that our relationships with them could, you know, we should reach out and try to establish better relationships to facilitate that linkage. I'd also note that this integration is both ways. So not only do we need behavioral health care people in primary care sites, but we need, in our substance abuse facilities, to have primary care. So wherever you land in the system, you have access to both. Some of the prevention components, I already mentioned prevention services with no copay. Medicare, starting next year, is going to have comprehensive individualized wellness plans, again, with no copay, so that they will do a thorough risk assessment. And that certainly should include screening and brief intervention. And you can do once every 5 years, and they develop a whole plan for better lifestyle changes. So at the bottom here, it talks about some of the money that we garnered for primary care out of the Prevention Trust Fund. So in kind of a summary on that piece, what are the major drivers in the Affordable Care Act? One, more people will have insurance coverage. Medicaid will play a much larger role in mental health, and I think especially in substance abuse, than ever before. There is and will be a greater emphasis on primary care and the coordination for behavioral health services. Home and community-based services are encouraged under this bill rather than institutional care. Preventing diseases and promoting wellness is a huge theme. One thing I didn't mention was there's emphasis also in this bill around workplace wellness programs, so that even this year, there are grants being given out to small employers if they provide comprehensive wellness programs. And starting in 2014, they can give discounts if you go through certain programs. So if you're a smoker, of course nobody here is, right? Anyway, if you're a smoker and they'll say, I'll reduce your premium, your monthly premiums for your health insurance by 20% if you take a stop smoking class. So, you know, we used to have very robust employee assistance programs that have largely gone by the board, turned into just referral programs. Hopefully some of this emphasis on wellness programs by employers can try to regrow some of that capacity. There's also a huge emphasis on outcomes, demonstrate your quality. There's a new term you may have heard, comparative effectiveness. It used to be that you just wanted to be an evidence-based service, but under comparative effectiveness, you have to be the best evidence-based when compared against all the alternative services. Some of the opportunities we've identified, expanding, could I have some water, dear? Yeah. Expanding prevention. It is so dry here, you know. I don't know if people live here. I think I shrivel up and blow away. There is the prevention services, there's the incentive for primary care. One of the things that I feel very good about, I've been with SAMHSA for over 10 years, is that SAMHSA right now is very active on every part of the committees that are designing the new health care system. There are seven core HHS committees. We've got our elbows at the table at most of them and are actively contributing. So, and as you can see, both the exchange plans and that Medicaid expansion requires essential mental health and substance abuse services. So, you know, we're kind of on the map in a way that we haven't been in the past. Because, though, of this treatment expansion, you know, there are questions about where is the place of the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Block Grant. And I think the agency has put out some strong markers that, A, not everybody's going to be covered. So the block grant will still need to cover some people. But in addition, there are recovery-based services that insurance will never pay for. They are just too peer-based. They're not medical enough for either Medicaid or insurance. So there is still a need for block grant dollars to help provide the whole continuum for those in recovery. So some of the challenges, I've mentioned the capacity to provide services in a claims-based world of Medicaid. There's also a huge emphasis on accessing and developing information infrastructure. So, you know, they're moving as fast as they can push us to electronic health records. Medicaid, say in the future, I think it's a couple of years from now, won't even accept a bill unless you submit it electronically. So the whole IT area is another huge emphasis that we need to think about. So SAMHSA is trying to support the states. We've got a state roadmap. I'm trying to, you know, I have so many slide sets, I'm trying to remember which one I've got next here, sorry. What do the substance abuse treatment providers need to think about, the business practices? There's also, in this bill, trying to answer some of the Republicans' charges about wasting dollars. There's a huge emphasis on fraud and abuse. And so even though there's this huge Medicaid expansion, if you don't carefully document the service you rendered, individualized treatment, and what you did, you know, Medicaid will come back to you and say, nope, you didn't document it. You'll have to return the dollars we paid you for that service. So the whole documentation, and a one-size-fits-all is not going to work. You're going to have to document every week and the treatment plan. And so that's another piece of moving into this environment. Workforce. Typically, insurance-based models stop at the independent practice level. And so what does that mean for our peer support folks? And I think there are ways to provide some of those services still under Medicaid. Medicaid has a whole letter on what you need to do to have peer support services under Medicaid. But there are, as I said, still other services which will probably fall outside. But workforce has real implications for whether Medicaid will pay you or not. So we'll have to think about that. We need to, I've mentioned the primary care linkages, and I think we should also consider, knowing our population is difficult to enroll under Medicaid, how we as providers can assist in that. There's certainly more incentives to identify mental health and substance abuse, given that ESPRT will be a paid service under most insurance plans. It'll be required at no copay under private insurance and also under Medicare. Medicaid is not covered that way because states have options, but there is an enhanced federal match if Medicaid does cover prevention services. So within this new world, we need to have a very clear and consistent definition of what services are in our field so that purchasers know what they're buying, so that we as block grant purchasers know what we're buying. So right now SAMHSA is involved in what's called the Good and Modern Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services Benefit. So that when, and already agencies have turned to us and said, okay, so what are essential mental health and substance abuse services? So that affects the Medicaid expansion, it affects the exchange plans, it affects the whole parity discussion, and it's going to affect what services the block grant dollars can be used for. So our Good and Modern benefit is one to provide a full range of high quality services, meeting the age, gender, culture, and other circumstances. SAMHSA believes that a good system is achievable and may not be perfect, but is something that will be our base in this very important transition period for healthcare services. Some of the principles, we are part of health. This is something we're saying, you know, I mentioned we're at lots of tables around healthcare reform. And one of the things we're trying, and I think a lot of people are getting, is you can't just do healthcare and leave mental health and substance abuse over here, because it's gonna cost you. And we are part of healthcare. And if you wanna create healthier communities, you're gonna have to include mental health and substance abuse services. Services need to address health disparities. They need to be person-centered. There needs to be a full continuum of services. We need to be sure that the services we're buying are evidence-based or promising practices. And we need to get beyond service widgets. I kind of talked about that already. So what are the components in our continuum? Health homes, prevention and wellness, engagement services, engagement into treatment, medications, community supports and recovery services, intensive support services, living supports, out-of-home residential, and acute intensive services. Already, some of the internal groups have been developing and defining services. I know Reed, who's going to be talking, has worked on the prevention group. Expert for alcohol is clearly one of those. Screening and brief intervention for tobacco use. SAMHSA, when I first started, was not dealing much with tobacco use, and I think that has really changed, and we are re-engaging and reclaiming the addiction portion of that treatment service. Brief motivational interventions for alcohol and drug use with the elderly, parent training, and facilitated referral. And if you want to know what those mean, you can ask Reed, because I don't know. But he helped define them. So what about our state substance abuse authorities? Well, this looks at what kind of funding they've had in 2007. And as you can see, state funds are the majority, are the largest portion. Substance abuse block grant is the second largest portion. Medicaid is less, is 13%. So what does that mean? That means that in many states, our substance abuse, state substance abuse leadership has not paid a lot of attention to Medicaid. There are some states that that's not true, but generally. So we need to work with educating them. There's also concerns that a lot of the treatment has overemphasized residential, non-medical residential and long-term care, and that we need to push more of our services into home and community-based services. We also, the state systems have huge challenges with some of their data systems. And again, we need to, you know, under the ACA, Medicaid and the exchange have to build an interoperable system. You know, I talked about I could walk in the door, apply to one, I'll get the other if I'm eligible. Well, that's because they're going to have interlocking data exchanges. And What's important about that is we need to also be a part of that, because that's where the money is to build those systems, and we need to be sure that they include some of the substance abuse services and purchasing that we do. So SAMHSA's developed a state roadmap primarily to try to help the states, and you know, the states are kind of like, you know, a classroom. You know, you got your eager adapters and you got your laggards and everything in between. But we're really talking with them about, you know, being sure you know what your state is planning right now in healthcare reform, because I bet you the committees are already meeting. They need to understand these new health exchanges. Who's going to be running them? Probably your state insurance director, a commissioner. Well, who knows those people? I don't know those people. You know, there are new bridges we have to build. We're asking that the states really look at the coverage gaps so that we can, so Medicaid's going to pick up a huge bit of treatment. What other recovery services are out there? Or if they're not out there, what are they? And we'll try to build them. Eligibility, as I said, is going to be a big piece of it. And we need to be sure that as the states build these systems, that they are consumer friendly. There's also a lot of concern around service capacity. You know, what is everybody's worst nightmare is because the states are really hurting, that they'll really cut all of the funding for substance abuse services, and people will go out of business, and suddenly 2014 will come, and they got way more demand than we've got capacity for. So I will say that Medicaid is already saying 2014 is now. Cindy Mann, who's director, saying, you got to build your capacity now. You got to be thinking now. The emphasis on prevention and integration, and also there are going to be more demands around quality and documenting your performance. So, I didn't think that was my last one. Okay, so what are the real impacts, just to summarize, of having this huge influx, particularly around Medicaid? States must be poised for adequate enrollment and adequate capacity for treatment services. And we're engaged in some technical assistance to be sure, and the state needs to engage in preparing the providers to be ready for this Medicaid expansion. There need to be identification of the gaps in your state so that this new influx of dollars, the more flexible funds can be used to plug the holes and create new services when needed. And we need to think of our block grant in different ways strategically so that we're sure that those dollars are spent where they're really needed. Thank you very much.